This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 154 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. One question that I get asked all the time was asked by @FadeToZacFF on Twitter this week. The question reads, this year, if your whole league goes late-round QB, when is the earliest that you're willing to select the QB1? The short answer is that there's no answer. Deciding when you take your quarterback should be dependent on how the rest of your roster is looking at that time. That might be a stupid answer, but there is more to it. The biggest problem with being one of the first people to draft a position that's not high in demand is that you run the risk of not reading the draft properly. And if you do that, you're not gaining as much value as you really think when you take that player. Like, let's say it's the sixth round in a really competitive draft where everyone is just pounding wide receivers and running backs. No quarterback has been selected in the sixth round. You're sitting there staring at Aaron Rodgers and you pull the trigger. The issue in being the first person to get a quarterback when the rest of your league isn't getting quarterbacks is what happens if everyone else then waits until round 10 or later to get that quarterback. That means that you getting Aaron Rodgers where you got him isn't nearly as valuable as you originally thought. The opportunity cost isn't as significant in the sixth round as it would be in the third or the fourth round, but where you got Rodgers, every other owner in your league was getting an additional running back or a wide receiver. So you're playing catch up against them, and that's emphasized when every other team goes with a late round quarterback approach. Every player is valuable at some point, but I do think that this is a component that's not thought about enough when we make our decisions during a draft. You don't see it as much with tight ends because we know elite tight ends are more valuable than elite quarterbacks. And you obviously don't see it with running backs or wide receivers because everyone is always drafting running backs and receivers. If you know for a fact that you're going to start a quarterback run when you get Aaron Rodgers in the sixth round, then go for it. That's different. But if you're fearful that everyone in your league is going to get a quarterback with a super late pick, you're just devaluing that position by selecting it so early. There are plenty of more questions on this week's mailbag show, but before digging in, I wanted to remind you guys about NumberFire Premium. With NumberFire's customizable draft kit, you can just enter your league settings and get a custom draft board tailored to you. Plus, with NumberFire Premium, you get risk profiles, auction values, tier sheets, expert rankings, and so much more. That doesn't even include NumberFire's award-winning DFS tools, gambling picks, and premium content that also comes with NumberFire Premium. First-time users can use promo code CHAMPION at checkout and get their first month of premium for just $9.99. That's promo code CHAMPION. Visit numberfire.com/premium for more details. Now let's get to these questions. This first question says, hey JJ, the quarterback position being deeper than ever this year is stated frequently by most fantasy analysts, and it certainly looks to be true. But the converse to this is that there are fewer teams to stream defenses against. Injuries can and will happen, but the Bills and the Jets are the only teams that look like good streaming options at the moment. Should this change in supply in any way affect the way we approach defenses in 2018? Thanks, Sean C. I thought this was a really smart question, Sean, so thank you for that. But one thing to keep in mind if you feel this way, really about anything in fantasy football, is that it's all relative. Like back in 2011, when I decided to start writing the Late Round Quarterback ebook, I did so because everyone was talking about how it's a passing league, so you needed to get a quarterback early in your fantasy drafts as a result of that. But really, it was becoming a passing league for everyone. Not just elite quarterbacks, but for every quarterback. And we can use that mentality with this type of question. If every offense is good, then that just means the defense that you're selecting isn't gaining any more of an edge because it's not like they're facing different offenses. But I also don't want to overstate the current situation in the NFL. Just because teams feel generally okay about their quarterback situations across the league doesn't mean there won't be favorable matchups to exploit. And it doesn't mean quarterbacks won't be turning the ball over or getting sacked. And remember, the real reason that you can stream defenses still is due to supply and demand. There are loads and loads of defenses available each week on your waiver wire, so you're going to have a decent time finding some of those defenses that have predictably usable performances. This next question is from @fantasy_boss on Twitter. A lot of fantasy football studies yield mostly expected results and outcomes on strategy, i.e. late round QB. Have you done any studies that have yielded surprising results that cause you to think in a drastically different way? If so, what were they? I don't know if I would say that any studies caused me to think drastically different, but I will say one of the things that I tell writers all the time is to never go into an article with some idea in your head as to what the conclusion will be. Always let the data do the talking. Now, it's hard to not have some idea in your head when you go into a study, But there are plenty of times where what I think is going to be concluded just isn't based on the data. One example is from an article I did a few years ago on what first round running back busts look like in fantasy football. A lot of people might assume that busts come from older running backs who have carried a huge workload, but what the study showed was that young players actually bust at a higher rate, mostly because we don't have that big of a sample size on them. I've also done a lot of ADP versus points scored analysis over the last couple of years, and I've found that running back expected output isn't all that significantly different than wide receiver expected output. Everyone seems to view wide receivers as safer bets in your fantasy drafts, and they are slightly, but it's not that drastic. And then all the while, everything that I've studied still shows that having an elite running back provides the biggest edge that you can find in fantasy football. It just depends on whether or not you can get that player. So there are small things that have been mildly surprising, but nothing has drastically changed my views. I think more of that comes from real football analysis, like how Tony Romo was actually an amazingly clutch quarterback. This next question says, "Hi JJ, huge fan of the show and had a question for you. Most of my home leagues use 5 points per touchdown pass for quarterbacks instead of 4. Would this move ADP much for quarterbacks, maybe up a round or so? Al." So I wrote a quick piece a few years ago on how 6 points per touchdown pass leagues shouldn't change your quarterback approach. The gist of the article is that while your projections will look different, and those projections will absolutely make elite quarterbacks look more valuable, we have to remember that fantasy football is a weekly game. It's why I'm not a big fan of value-based drafting, especially when it comes to quarterbacks. The position is replaceable and it can be streamed, so to assume that a team who takes the 12th quarterback in your draft is going to start that guy each and every week is kind of foolish. Basically, what I found in the study is that on a week-by-week basis, not a lot changes. Like I said earlier, it's all relative. It's not like a streamer gets 4 points per touchdown pass while another quarterback gets 5. If your streamer throws 2 or 3 touchdowns, then that streamer is getting 10 or 15 points for his touchdowns. Unless quarterback scoring is absolutely insane, your strategy should not change much in a single quarterback format. And I went over all of those reasons on the Superflex podcast that I did last month. Don't let one single point per touchdown pass alter your strategy when it won't really be felt on a week-by-week basis. This next question is from @TAcanavari. In reference to auctions, have you found it more successful to be more financially aggressive early or to wait on bidding to grab the imminent value that will come as others run out of funds? I definitely don't aggressively spend just because I have money, but you've definitely got to read the room. I've been in auctions where people are afraid to spend early, which presents value right away. But then the opposite holds true too. I think what's key is to nominate players that you don't want and that you know will go for a lot of money just to allow yourself to become the bully in the room. It's always nice to have the most money during an auction. So there's not one single way of doing it, but you most definitely should be finding ways to get others to spend while you aren't. This next question is from @Justin_Redwards. How are you handling the Washington backfield with Geis's injury? Does it affect Chris Thompson's usage? I think Thompson will see a slight bump in attempts as a result of the injury, but we know the coaching staff doesn't want him to see that much work or too much work, which is why we shouldn't assume that he just gets all of it. As it stands, Washington has Rob Kelly, Samaje Perine, and Capri Bibbs that would hypothetically be chasing that early down work. But the bottom line is that we really don't know what this backfield is going to look like. And I don't think it's necessary to take a stab at it during your draft because whoever gets that early down work will already be limited given Chris Thompson's presence in that backfield. And since you don't know who will get that work and you don't know if that work will be split or not, it's not nearly as favorable as what we'd see from Darius Geis, who was locked in as the early down back in that offense. If I had to choose, I guess I would go with Samaje Perine. But I'm really not a fan of any of the backs on that roster to choose from, aside from Chris Thompson. This next one is from @TSomers32. Your strategy for tight end this year has been Gronk or a late rounder. Would this potentially change in a zero running back approach? So I had a comparable question on last week's mailbag, and I'm going to answer it in a similar way. No, it doesn't change depending on the strategy because the tight end work that I did is what I found to be optimal. This is no different than if you were to go zero RB and then you say, given this, should I take a quarterback early? No, you shouldn't take a quarterback early. Or at least I wouldn't take a quarterback early given what I've found to be the smartest, most optimal way of drafting. So to reiterate, the tight end approach that I think that you should employ in 2018 is to either get Gronk or wait. And that's generally how I'll feel most seasons as long as Gronk's ADP doesn't become too high. This next question is from @Foster_BSE. I know you like Stafford as a late round quarterback to target, but are you concerned at all that the coaching staff change/philosophy will reduce his pass attempts and production? So pass attempts actually don't correlate to fantasy success at the quarterback position as much as volume at running back and wide receiver. Let's just assume that a typical starting quarterback is going to throw the ball at least 20 or more times in a game. Of all the quarterback games between weeks 1 and 16 since 2011, the R-squared value between fantasy points scored and attempts is a very minimal 0.05. There's not a whole lot of correlation between fantasy points and attempts on a game-by-game basis. What matters is touchdowns. The correlation between fantasy points scored and touchdowns among this same group is 0.65. That's significantly higher. Guys, this is why I'm high on Drew Brees and the Saints passing attack this year. The way touchdowns are scored can often be random, and the Saints had as many rushing scores last year as passing ones. With a little bit of regression in the touchdown column, Drew Brees can still get to 30 touchdowns even on fewer attempts than we're used to him seeing. So because of this, I'm not that concerned with Matthew Stafford. I also don't think the Lions' defense is that great, so even if they want to run the football, they might not be able to due to game script. This last question is from @DwayneB13. As you made your journey to where you are now, what was one stumbling block in your process of analysis that held you back, and how did you come to realize it? Man, I look back at old articles and analysis that I've done, and I seriously cringe. I think if you don't, you're kind of doing it wrong because you're not growing as an analyst. I would say what held me back early on in my fantasy football writing career was that I wasn't thoughtful enough with my approach to data. A lot of times I just set really random parameters when doing a study, or I made assumptions that certain metrics mattered when they didn't. Fortunately, 6 or 7 years ago, there just weren't as many good data analysts in the fantasy football world as there are now, so it wasn't noticed as much as it should have been noticed. I think in general, though, I've just tried to be more well-rounded with my analysis, and what I mean by that is, when I'm writing and analyzing, I think more about how people can poke holes into my arguments, and I try to make sure that I'm covering everything. When I first started, I don't think I was good enough at that. And I think a big mistake that people make early on is that they try way too hard to be right. I definitely did that early on. It's really important to be right and provide proper information, but it's a bad look when you're fighting to be right. It's a bad look to have to tout when you do something right. People who read your work will know. They'll come to you and they'll thank you when you've helped them out. You don't need to backpat yourself when something goes the right way, because you're then opening yourself up to being destroyed when something doesn't go your way. And that's gonna happen plenty. And I'd say over the first year that I was doing this, I was way too afraid of being wrong. Now I embrace being wrong, because that's all part of the game. That's the last one though for today's show. Thanks again to everyone for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And if you could leave me a rating and review on iTunes, I'll love you forever and ever. I'm also on Twitter @LateRoundQB. You can follow me on there for fantasy football and football information, but also for dad tweets. Thanks everyone. I'll talk to you next week.